was agreed that the sentencing hearing would be based on proof beyond a reasonable doubt standard. The difficulty with that is it doesn't make a really difference that the defense and the prosecution agreed, but the court agreed that that would be the standard. So we have no doubt that it was supposed to be the same. The court really didn't apply that standard, and the prosecution in their brief is really trying to get out of that standard by citing cases and propositions that relate to sentencing hearings that are had after the defendant has pled guilty, and the standard is by a preponderance of the evidence. If you look at the testimony of the witnesses here, and not only is it the fact that we all know that people testify to obtain benefits, and that's not enough to negate proof beyond a reasonable doubt, all these witnesses testified to obtain benefits, but as to each and every one of the witnesses, there were other things. We have Mr. Keith, who gave numerous statements to the authorities. This date, never mentioned the defendant. And then when he said, asked for an explanation why he never mentioned the defendant, he says, oh, I told those agents. They're lying when they say I didn't tell them. And what's the credibility of such a witness?
How much would you have to reduce the finding below the 159 kilograms in order to be entitled to a lower sentence?
I don't know. I mean, quite honestly, I really think that what there has to be here is a new sentencing hearing before a different judge. Because, you know, he's sort of set in his position as to what the sentence should be, and he's made a finding. And I think there has to be a reevaluation. It's hard for me to say just what credibility you should give. To some of these witnesses, you should give no credibility. As to Keith, he's just his, you know.
Did the judge accept agreement between the parties altering the standard of proof? I'm curious about that.
Did he? Yes.
Should he?
Well, should a judge do that?
Yeah. I mean, what if the parties agreed, well, let's not bother with proof beyond a reasonable doubt in this criminal case. Let's do a preponderance.
No.
Would that be?
No, it's not permissible. That would not be permissible.
That would not be. But even going the other way, isn't there something a little odd about the parties establishing their own verdicts?
Then the judge could have said, I won't do that.
No, I know he could have said that, but was it proper, in your view, for him to agree to the higher standard of proof?
I hadn't thought about that until you proposed the question. My answer to that would be maybe he shouldn't. Again, this whole thing should be sent back.
Well, see, it worked in your favor this time because the burden is higher
right.
and greater than what
my,
it is. But, I mean, the Fifth and Eleventh Circuits have spoken on this and say that, you know, the parties can't stipulate as to what the law is, if that's not what the law is, you know. In other words, you can certainly stipulate to what the law is,
but
if it's that what the law is not, you can't stipulate. I mean, that's not appropriate.
Then the plea should be withdrawn, because the plea here was based upon an agreement that the determination as to the amount of drugs would be by a standard of reasonable doubt.
But here it would be harmless error because, again, it's a higher standard. I mean, there's no reason to set the plea aside because here the district court said the reasonable doubt standard was hit, and it's the lesser standard that would really be appropriate.
But if the judge is permitted, as I think he did here, to apply the lesser standard, because there's no way that you could look at the testimony of these witnesses and find that it was sufficient to prove proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I mean, it's just, you have Keith. I mean, I don't want to go through each one of the witnesses that's set out in the brief. And you even have the government misstates in their brief on page 25 and 26, I think, where the issue is whether the defendant cut off selling in 201, and the witness says, yeah, I stopped with him in 201. I mean, there was a little bit, but everything was with everybody else. The government says, oh, no, we can include 202. I mean, sorry, he said 202, but we really stopped with him. Was it other people? The government said include 202. Not with what the witness said. The witness said, I did very little with 202. Now, he had given other statements. We have, you know, you have the typical, if I can have 30 seconds now, I'll save it from the, you have the typical thing when you taught at law school, how you disprove the credibility of a witness, and each one and every one of these witnesses meet that standard. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Carr?
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. First, let me answer your question, Judge Posner, with regard to a different amount of drugs if the judge had found it. The next level in the sentencing guidelines would be 50 to 150 kilograms of cocaine. So if the judge found less than 150 under all the other criteria for Mr. Hernandez, his sentencing guideline range would have been 324 to 405 months, which still would have sort of been in the middle of where Judge McDade actually sentenced Mr. Hernandez to the 360 months. Let me address then the questions that were posed with regard to the standard of review, or the burden of proof, that the was adopted in the district court. I wasn't trial counsel, so I can't tell you what negotiations went on into this, but I can tell you that what the government saved in this case was a two-week trial with a number of witnesses. It got a certainty of conviction that subjected an individual to at least a
minute. I can understand how it's a perfectly rational deal. The question is how much latitude parties should have in criminal cases to alter the rules. I mean, you could imagine a situation which a defendant said, well, if you let me do X, Y, and Z, I'll let you prove guilt beyond a preponderance. Right? You drop all but one minor count, and then, all right, in exchange, I'll let you prove me guilty without the proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
I totally understand those concerns, but I think when you agree, as a practical matter, when you're agreeing to be bound by a higher burden of proof, it only inures to the benefit of the defendant. So in terms of any...
No, because you wouldn't make that deal if it just inured to the benefit of the defendant, right?
Well,
He must have given up something in return to induce you, not personally, but I mean your office, to go along. Right?
That's true. The trial itself, absolutely, Your Honor. I didn't mean to discount that. What I meant was the higher burden of proof works to the defendant's advantage because the government normally would only have to prove beyond a...
Right, he's given up a trial.
Right. But in this particular...
Or you push this, he might say, well, look... I'll make a deal with you. I'll plead guilty if you agree that instead of putting me in prison, you'll give me 100 lashes. Right? Is that permissible?
That would not be permissible, Your Honor. No. And of course, that's the ultimate penalty, as opposed to how do you get to that. In this particular, I was thinking. Actually, sometimes I have thoughts when I'm traveling from downstate up to the Court of Appeals. But one of the thoughts I had was that this court and a number of other courts out there have had some cases where they've criticized the government and suggested that there may be cases, the tail wagging the dog cases. There may be situations eventually where we will impose a higher burden of proof on the government at sentencing in these relevant conduct kinds of cases. And so there's been a suggestion out there that the court may on its own change the burden of proof on the government in some situations. So you've never reached that. No other court that I'm aware of has ever found the next level.
And of course it makes, I mean, I don't have any quarrel with it either from a practical standpoint, because it's a guaranteed protection for the defendant, because here it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, and the main thing I'm looking at, what's the implication of this? And the 5th and 11th have already come down and said, you know, the parties can't stipulate to what the law is not. And so if we found that the district court applied the wrong standard, would that invalidate the plea? And or should we use the clear error standard, you know, when we review it? You know, just thinking about the implications of
it. Your Honor, it would seem to me that if this court decided that the burden of proof that the parties agreed on was inappropriate and violates policy and parties shouldn't be able to do that, that was a critical portion of the defendant's plea agreement, and that he at least ought to have the opportunity to withdraw his plea, because there's no doubt that was it was part of the plea agreement itself.
Mr. Cohen argues that the judge understandably it would be understandable, didn't really take the reasonable doubt standard seriously because, of course, he's accustomed to sentencing under a different standard. So it's a little hard to shift gears all of a sudden. So what is it in his analysis that suggests he was applying any standard other than the normal sentencing standard?
He made his findings, Your Honor, and he found that that the defendant was responsible for 159 kilograms. The prosecutor specifically wanted the record to reflect and the judge to so indicate that that determination had been made using a beyond a reasonable doubt standard. And
if you look at the evidence the judge relied on, does it really support that?
I think it absolutely does, Your Honor. There was the live testimony of four witnesses who directly received cocaine from Mr. Hernandez.
Sure, but how does that get up to the 159 kilograms?
Well, I set it out in our brief, Your Honor, that based on the testimony of Mr. Daly and Mr. Harmon, I believe there was 80 kilograms in 2001 and 2002. There was another 70-some kilograms from Mr. Harmon in 2003 and 2004. Mr. Keith said he purchased 15 kilograms directly from Mr. Hernandez.
Why did the judge? But now you're up beyond 300 kilograms. Why did the judge draw the line at 159?
I can't answer that, Your Honor.
There's no combination of testimony that actually yields that 159 figure.
I have to say, Your Honor, I exercised many different mathematical computations, mm-hmm. and I could not get to 159. Mm-hmm. I don't know how Judge McDade arrived at that. I specifically asked the trial attorney how Judge McDade arrived at that. He didn't know. I certainly agree it would have been preferable that the judge would have made akin to some findings of fact.
That follows up on Judge Posner's point then in terms of whether the right standard was really applied or not, because this sort of cut down, you know, like, oh, I think it's probably true, but I'm going to do a reduction of months, you know, because for whatever reason, you see that more typically, that's the only way we see it, by the preponderance standard. So it does raise a question when it's not proved and, you know, directly nailed and tied directly to a witness's testimony.
Does the probation department have any recommendation?
Probation department, actually, their findings exceeded 200 kilograms, Your Honor. The prosecutor laid out at sentencing based on the testimony 196 kilograms, pretty specifically, as I set forth in my brief, how the prosecutor arrived at his 196. But, again, there is no...
There's no corroboration because this is all historical data.
That's correct, mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Carson. Mr. Cohen, your time expired. Would you like another minute?
Yes and no. I'd like to have a minute. I'd like to have 30 seconds to make a statement on that Zambrano case that you heard earlier.
All right.
Okay. I'm suggesting that this court set a bright line rule that the government is responsible for the care of inmates, meaning the total government. And if the government doesn't live up to the responsibility, they have to pay the price and there have to be a new trial. It's the only way to fully stop things getting fouled up with witnesses having sex in jails, whatever it is, or drugs, or put the burden on the government to make sure that this doesn't happen. I thank you for letting me speak my piece.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Cohen, and thank you, Mr. Cox. And the court will be in...